Welcome to Beyond Leading, the podcast that cuts through the noise to get real about leadership, team dynamics, personal growth, and the messy, brilliant reality of work, life, and everything in between. Each episode brings grounded insights, sharp truths, and honest conversations with experienced leaders and coaches as we explore what it really takes to lead well today. We don't deal in one-size-fits-all answers. We spark ideas, offer grounded perspectives, and create space for you to work out what fits your world. So let's get into it. Welcome back to the Beyond Leading podcast. I'm Alec Pearson, and today I'm joined by my colleagues Tiffany Bernard and Nick Sellers for a conversation that many leaders will quietly recognize: soft burnout. Soft burnout isn't dramatic, and it doesn't look like crisis. You're still performing, still meeting deadlines, still showing up. But inside, something feels heavier, flatter, as if you're moving through treacle and slowly losing connection with the things that normally give you energy. You look fine to everyone else, but you don't feel like yourself. In this episode, we explore why soft burnout is so easy to miss, why high performers are especially vulnerable, and how stress narrows our perspective until it feels like choices disappear. We talk about boundaries, perfectionism, the black fog that stress creates, and the subtle ways people disconnect long before anything looks wrong on the outside. We also look at this from a leadership angle: how to notice the early signs in your team, how to create space for honest conversations, and why emotional flatness or withdrawal should never be ignored. If you've been feeling a little off, running on fumes, or simply coasting through days that used to energize you, this conversation, we believe, will help you make sense of what's going on beneath the surface. Tiffany, over the past couple of months, you have been discussing soft burnout more. What is soft burnout?
It's something that we're seeing a lot of at the moment. Soft burnout is when you're still fully productive, you're still showing up, you're still meeting the deadlines, you're feeling more and more as if you're dragging your body through treacle. You don't find joy in anything. I think that's probably one of the biggest things, is nothing brings you joy. You're very, very flat in everything that you do. You're going through the motions. People ask how you are and you're fine. You're ignoring everything that's going on in your body. The problem with soft burnout is that it's invisible. People don't recognize it in you, and you might not recognize it in yourself. There's so many people who say, I'm just exhausted. I just need a weekend off. However, the fundamentals of what they're feeling are much deeper than just a weekend off. That feeling of being overstretched mentally, physically, that's what soft burnout is.
Nick, what's your thoughts on that?
I can relate to it. I'm just thinking about the moments that we took a conversation before we started this episode. So here's a confession, if confession is the right word to use. There is a fair degree of depression in my family. I've experienced depression over time, but actually I wonder sometimes whether in those depressed periods, it wasn't so much depression I was experiencing as something that Tiffany's just described, actually, which is soft burnout, which is functioning, going through the motions, getting through things, not going over that line in the sand where you just end up being not in the business for a while or not in the relationship for a while, but actually just not being there in a happy place.
Not being present is that feeling of disconnect between your head and your body very often as well. And it happens a lot to high performers who are constantly pushing themselves to keep going. It's the idea that if you stop, somehow you're weak or lazy, and it is something that occurs through our own faults, unfortunately, because one of the main causes is a lack of boundaries.
Which is a big problem for many of us.
It is. It's the idea that you have to take on everything. It's the idea that you don't have permission to say no. It's the idea that somehow if you can't manage 30 hours in a day, you're less than. And that's simply not the case. It's simply not the case. boundaries is a whole other issue, but it is the root cause of why this soft burnout happens. And it's very, very difficult to spot. If you're displaying symptoms of straight up burnout, where you're starting to drop the ball, for want of a better expression, you're starting to show up late to work, you're starting not to appear at all, people will start to ask you what's going on. They'll start to get concerned and they'll maybe push you to confess, if you like, that something's not right. But soft burnout is invisible, as I said before. So people don't see it. As much as they were asking you to do 150% beforehand, they will continue. And because you have high expectations of yourself, you'll continue to try and run at that speed.
What you said earlier about some of the kind of features of soft burnout, it also got me thinking as well, and I just want to see, is this one of them? You could argue typically when you're more alert that your head might well kind of direct you on certain decisions and understanding what's the best thing to do. But if you're starting to get soft burnout, does the heart start to overtake the head? And the reason I'm asking that question, because I sometimes feel you come back from holiday, you're all refreshed and ready to go. And then 3 months later, you've been working so hard. I start to think, is my heart overtaking my head? And is that because I'm starting to get some elements of tiredness? I feel I'm going through the motions. I'm probably a little bit disconnected. Do you think that is a warning sign for us just to see if that's coming through?
For me, there's a very visual picture that I have of what soft burnout looks like. And it's that black fog that creeps up our body. And that black fog is caused by stress. The more stressed we are, the more this fog comes up and it envelops us and literally gets to the point where it just leaves our eyes. But the problem with that black fog is that we see things in very binary terms. They're good or bad. They're right or wrong. They're hard. They're not. We don't see the possibilities. We can't see left and right. We're like a horse with blinders on. Sorry, I'm throwing all these metaphors out to say, but we are. You can't see. It's impossible. So it becomes more suffocating. It feels as if you don't have choices anymore. It feels as if, you know, you again, pulling your body through treacle. And it's that stress that gives us that feeling. As soon as we can relieve the stress a little bit, that fog comes down. And you can start to move your head a little bit and you see there are other options. So I don't know how that fits in with your heart.
Yeah, it's quite funny because I was just kind of writing notes for myself there, and I wrote brain fog, and it was interesting you then mentioned fog.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely something that resonates there. See, I am bad for this, I must admit. As I said, you come back from holiday, you're running 100 miles an hour and it all feels fine. And I do wonder if not just myself, but there's others of us, we're always thinking about what that early energy looked like. We're maybe still clinging on to it. But 2 months later, if you're running at that fast pace and you're working so hard and there's so much going on in your own private life, you're kind of thinking you're still as you were a few months ago, but actually you're not. Because I think I'm actually quite bad for that. And I've got to maybe think, pace it much more instead of going so fast.
I'm a great advocate with my clients for finding a life that you don't need a holiday from. And there is that sense that you go on holiday, you come back, you're refreshed, you're able to run at 110 miles an hour and you think everything's going well. Then it gets to the point where you start to live for the next break. Mm-hmm. And that in itself causes stress. I'm so fed up with my life. I can't be bothered with this. You do end up sinking into that kind of level of energy where you feel a little bit sorry for yourself, where it's just not fair and other people are not the same. And that sense of needing to get away to find something that's missing from your life is something that I work a lot with my clients. Because if we're living a life that we love, it might not be perfect, but at least it's balanced.
Yes.
That's where you can run maybe not at 150 miles an hour every single day, but you can get that constant 90 going throughout the year. And that's really what we need to strive for. You get much more done with consistency than you do with little spurts.
Yes, completely agree with that. Nick, what are you thinking?
The question that came into my mind was, what part does perfectionism play in this?
That goes hand in hand very often with high performers, though, doesn't it?
Yep. in that striving for kind of wanting to be a great team player, wanting to be on top of your game the whole time, you know, that striving for reaching the 100% output, perfection, performance, speed, all those other things, there is the risk that actually we just run at such a high pace, such a high volume, and before we know it, we're running on fumes.
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem with perfection is that perfection, according to whom? Perfection only exists in our minds.
Well, actually, who really notices perfection as well? I'm thinking back on a conversation with a client a while ago who's a photographer, who is an amazing photographer, but would spend hours upon hours in the darkroom touching up images electronically, digitally. So it wasn't a darkroom, of course. And I asked him why, and he said, because that's what I do. We've got to give the client the very best possible images. And I said, what do the clients think? And so he tested that with a set of clients who actually just took the images without any touching up and said, oh, these are great.
Yeah. And this is the thing. Perfection exists only in our mind. I was laughing to myself yesterday, actually, because one of the things that I don't like about summer is that everything needs ironing. And I hate ironing. With a passion, I hate ironing. For yesterday, I had like 2 hours of ironing to do. Okay. And as I'm ironing, I'm talking to somebody that we all know. And I was talking about ironing, and she was like, and she is somebody who is very, she has very high standards for herself. And she goes, I don't iron anything. I hang it up, it's good enough. And I started to laugh because I was thinking she's very, very perfect in other things. And that got me thinking about our different standards of perfection. My mum, I can't sleep if the sheets are not ironed. So I said, well, when you come and stay with me, you're going to have to find a way to get over that because they're not ironed here. Whereas this needs to be done like this, but this doesn't matter if it's not done. And for me, it's like, this has to be done like this, and I don't care about the sheets. So that idea of perfection is something that exists in our minds and can very easily drive us over the edge because we're striving for something that is immeasurable.
Where are you seeing, in terms of particular professions or particular sectors, where are you typically seeing more soft burnout happening, or is it across the board?
It's across the board. It really is across the board because those high performers exist everywhere.
Yeah.
And so it really doesn't make a difference of the industry. Maybe some industries are more prone to it because they are by definition, they've got more high performers in it. Yeah. Asset management, for example, is a very high stress, high performing industry. The hospitality industry, maybe, but generally, I mean, this is coming across everyone, especially at the moment. I think the external pressures that we're feeling, which may or may not affect us directly, but they're there. The global socioeconomic, sociopolitical landscape is something that I'm seeing is affecting a lot of people a lot.
Oh, absolutely. I concur with that. But just adding to that then, are you seeing any particular age bracket where it's maybe more common? I'm just thinking certain sectors, certain ages where I see it more, but I just want to see what are you seeing?
That brings up a very interesting question because I think different age brackets deal with stress differently.
Yes.
So I think that everybody is prone to it, but I think some age groups may be a little more resilient.
You're going to have to explain more. Give us some examples. Give us some age groups.
Put that wooden spoon away. All right. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you look at us, okay, we all belong to the Gen X generation. We have spent our entire lives, our entire careers getting on with it. We're very, very pragmatic. We're very resourceful. We're very down to earth. Mm. When we started working, nobody could care less about our emotions. In fact, we were encouraged not to even mention them and, for God's sake, don't bring them into the workplace. Nobody cared if we were feeling good or not feeling good. Nobody cared if we had issues at home, if there were problems with the kids. We were expected to show up and do our jobs. And this is something that we still do. We feel guilty when we allow the human side of us maybe to interfere, okay? We feel guilty, so take me for today, all right? I'm a little bit bunged up. I've got a bit of a cold going on, and I was lying in bed this morning going, I really would love to cancel today.
but you're here.
That didn't happen. No. Other generations, Gen Z, okay, are how they are because of us, because we are their parents. And we have tried to, for all the right reasons, protect them, coddle them, give them an easy life, make things, I don't know, we're more emotional with our children. And in being more emotional with our children and being more present with our children, we've made them less resilient. I know that I am guilty of trying to fix everything for my kids. If they have an issue, I will move heaven and earth to fix it. It may be an emotional issue. It may be an actual miss my flight issue. But I have to stop myself because it's not helping them. So this is a generation that comes up and they don't know how to deal with it. So they may be more prone to burnout more quickly than we were. But also maybe they're more aware of what is happening to them, whereas we just keep on going because we figure nobody cares.
What does it do to us societally if we can cut across the population in this way and say baby boomers, Gen X and so forth, we can move through the generations and tag them or stereotype them in this way, because we need people that are resilient in certain roles. And if the generation is being tagged as less resilient and subject to some form of burnout, what does that do when we need people in roles that require high resilience? The role that comes to mind, and it's probably not the right one, is you need surgeons to be completely detached from emotion during an operation. You need them to be focused on the transaction that's going on and not worrying about the comfort of anybody, especially if it's a 12-hour open heart surgery thing. So where I'm going with that is, what do we do? You know, because if we all become typical of the generation, what does that do? Does it mean that we rely on an aging generation of surgeons performing operations into their 80s because the later generations are not coping? I don't know. That's a bad example, but you get what I'm going.
No, it's a very good example. And the answer is, we're going to have to see what happens, because I'm very curious, because as I said, when we started working, emotions had no place in the workplace. Okay. Now, the traditional leadership of, I am your boss, you will do as I say, I'm not interested in your opinion, you've been here 5 minutes, I'm not going to ask you what you think because you don't know anything. That's changing. And it's changed a lot. And it's changed a lot because the generation coming into the workplace are demanding it. They're demanding to be heard. They're demanding to have their opinions taken into consideration. They want to be part of the process. So we've adapted. We've adapted. But now also they're demanding to work remotely. They're demanding to have a hybrid work situation. They do not want to be in the office 5 days a week. Okay. You talk to somebody under the age of 30, nobody wants to be in the office 5 days a week. They simply refuse to do it. And I'm very curious to see who gives in first. Because in America, there's a big call back to the office full time.
Yeah. In the UK as well, particularly in professional services. A lot. Yeah. One of them, I think it's JP Morgan, they've said everyone's got to be in 5 days a week. That's it. Other professional services firms are now saying mandatory, typically 3 days.
Yeah. And now it's going to be interesting to see who gives in first. So how are we going to do? Obviously, you can't generalize. I mean, baby boomers are probably the most resilient generation alive at the moment because of what they went through, because of what they've experienced. However, you'll be able to shake a tree and find several examples of baby boomers who are not resilient. You can find Gen Xers who are not pragmatic and resourceful. It's always the same. So there will always be, I think, people who will rise to the top. Generalizations only work to a certain extent. But the other question is, what's going to happen with the alpha generation that's coming through and use ChatGPT for everything?
I think another topic we'll discuss on that, because that's having impacts on critical thinking and understanding. You've written, to be honest, but yeah.
It's important, I think, for us to understand the difference in generational thinking and generational ways of being into consideration, that it is a generalization.
Yeah. Just to draw us back to the topic of, I don't think we've escaped the topic, but back to soft burnout as a topic, What happens if soft burnout is not addressed? Where does that lead for a person who is performing, 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 but getting no joy from any aspect of life anymore, I suppose, because that's what soft burnout probably results in. They function, but yeah. get no joy. What happens? Does it go on forever or does it come to an end?
It depends on the individual, doesn't it? I mean, the thing is, it something has to happen to stop it, because you're not going to allow yourself to continue like that. Something will give. You may get fed up and you may decide that you're going to get a coach. You may start to crack. You may end up in full burnout. The chances are more, and not a medical professional at all, but I would think the chances are more that you end up in full burnout rather than suddenly waking up one day and going, oh no, you know what? I'm good now. Having suffered from soft burnout more than once, you get to the point where you're aware, maybe not of the fact that it's soft burnout, but there is that question. For me, it was my kids were coming back. I don't know if it was both of them, is it? And there is nothing I love more than my kids coming home. And I just felt empty. And I was thinking, that's not normal. And I don't understand why it's like that. Why I don't understand why it's coming. Where's that coming from? So I think sometimes awareness kicks in, but you're not going to get rid of it if you don't ask for help. And that is the key here. It's like when you start to feel as if nothing is like bringing you happiness, or, you know, you're just like you're going through the motions, ask for help. Ask for help from a coach, from your partner, from your best friend, from whatever. It's a question of reaching out and asking for help. It's not a weakness, it's a strength to be able to say something's not right.
And just as I was listening to you there, Tiffany, makes me wonder that when we are in a period of what we call soft burnout, that actually we recognize that we're unhappy. We recognize the need to change something, but we end up changing the wrong thing, or we end up approaching change in the wrong way. I'm thinking about how many marriages have ended up ending because of a poor choice rather than because of incompatibility, that kind of thing. That's where my mind's going now. We want to change. We want to improve our happiness. So what do? We jettison a part of what is life for us in order to find some balance in what we do.
Yeah, because the thing is here, we're aware of the fact that we don't like how we feel, okay? I didn't like feeling hollow. I didn't like feeling empty. I'm an upbeat person. I'm generally optimistic. I generally have high energy. So I don't like it when I feel like that. But the problem is not knowing where it's coming from, not knowing what to change. And I think the problem is here is when we don't know exactly what to change, we tend to go for like grand gestures, thinking if I do this, my life will be so much better. But the fact of the matter is, it's a need within us that's not being fulfilled. And if we don't understand what that need is not being fulfilled, we can change all the things around us and still be miserable. So the need that's not being fulfilled when we're suffering from soft burnout is generally relatively simple. It's self-care. It's taking the time to breathe. It's being able to say no to people in the office. It's being able to say done is better. Don't let perfection stand in the way of progress. Done is better than perfect. It's giving ourselves permission to just let go a little bit. Because we can change everything. We can move countries. We can change partners. We can whatever. We can do all of that. If we don't change the fundamentals of how we treat ourselves, we're going to still feel empty.
So it does make me think in terms of our managers and leaders today and thinking about their teams, maybe we need to have more check-ins with our staff and thinking of our emotional intelligence. And actually just noticing if any team members are starting to be a little bit more disengaged, a little bit with more withdrawals coming through, go and ask them, give them that space, because maybe they're just desperate to say, yeah, I'm not feeling great, or I just don't feel like I usually do. Maybe give that space for a conversation. I think it's becoming key, more and more key, particularly as you're seeing much more of it. Because the thing I'm seeing with many clients is that they don't have that respect for their personal time during the day. So they're not blocking out distractions, even an hour or two a day, or blocking out meetings. Instead of having sitting in, 16, 20 hours of meetings a week, cut that down, but get more time for yourself. Give your head a chance to catch up and clear what's the thoughts that might well be going on.
And it's something that I'm smiling because you have people who come and they're like, I have no time. That's a big thing. I have no time. And it comes down to the fact that our calendars are open, that people can put things in, that sometimes people have got three meetings at the same time. And so you ask the question, which seems like such an obvious question. What can you do to take back control? And they're like, I don't know. There's nothing I can do. And say, okay, well, what are you in control of? Well, I can control my calendar. It gets down to the fact that people don't even realize anymore that you can simply block time, that you can switch off notifications. That's one of the biggest aha moments people have. I can switch off the notifications for an hour.
Well, you touched on this also a little earlier. It's not just about blocking time. It's also the willingness to renegotiate a meeting invite, to say no to things. We want to always be there, be on call or available and all of that. And there's various aspects, isn't there, of how we manage time. I was thinking about energy management as well, because time management is often time tied with energy management. You know, when are we our most productive, our most creative? When would be the ideal time in the day or the week to have meetings? When would be the ideal time to actually take time away from the desk, not necessarily time away from work, to go and do those things that need thinking through without the hustle and bustle of the office in the background?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the thing is, it's giving ourselves permission, okay? Because you'll find that the people who suffer from soft burnout are the ones who are pushing themselves consistently. They are the high performers. They are very often the perfectionists. And they're also the ones who believe that if you say no, you'll be judged for it. You'll be judged negatively for it, that you are obliged to take the meeting, that you are obliged to be on call 24/7. Again, it comes back to how we treat ourselves. And it doesn't matter how many people say, well, you know, Nick, you can say no to the meeting, and you'll go, yes, I know I can, but I don't want to. Is understanding that at some point we have to give ourselves permission to give ourselves space. Mm-hmm. And that space might be, I've got a heavy week coming up next week. I've got a lot of meetings, a lot going on. I don't want to do anything over the weekend. I'm talking all week long. I don't want to see people over the weekend. But then family comes in, but we've got to, and you've got...
It never ends. It never ends.
That's the thing. And that's why we need to be able to give ourselves permission to say no.
We touched on, I don't know whether we used the word or not, but we touched on victimhood earlier. You know, we've got to take the meetings. We're on the receiving end of everything that comes our way. We've got no choice.
That's it.
But that, if we stop being victims, that doesn't yet move us into the position of actually being in control of our time. It just moves us away from being unable. And we then move to a middle ground where we've stopped being a victim, but we're not yet fully in control. And fully in control is, I suppose, moving us further over towards making sure that there's blocks of time for us to do what we need to do, do what we want to do, have that time away from whatever it is that we're doing. I guess where I'm going with that is it may ultimately be a spectrum that we're talking about, but I see three distinct parts to the spectrum.
Yeah.
The victim end, the other end is the totally in control end. I'm not sure of a word that I could use to tag that, but it's totally in control. And then there's this middle ground, and we kind of have to pass through that middle ground on our way towards that totally in control area.
Of course, because it's a process, okay? Yeah. We have to trust the process. So when you're in that victim area, that's when you have got the stress. The stress is literally up to here. You can't see anything. You don't have any possibilities. There's no options. What can you do? I can't do anything. What can you change? I can't change anything. Life is happening to you. What can you control in your life? Nothing. Nothing. Everybody has control over everything. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
The thing is being able to get to a point where you recognize that and you're able to even get angry about it. If you can even get angry about the fact that you don't have, or you feel as if you don't have control, you can use that anger to reduce the stress. I'm fed up with this. I'm taking tomorrow off. You will take action of some description because of the anger that you feel, because that anger is going to put you in a position where you're going to start looking out for only you. It might be for a day, it might be for a week, but you will start looking out just for you. And in that time, your stress will diminish. And so, yes, you end up in the middle bit where it's not perfect, but you're on your way there. But in that middle bit is where the stress comes down, and that's where you start to see, actually, I can take steps. I can turn off the notifications. It doesn't matter if I don't answer a phone call or answer a message in 5 seconds. It's like the world will not end. I can take the weekend off, because if the world explodes, they will find me. Mm-hmm. And this is what people don't realize. I have to be on call. Well, what happens? What happens if you're not on call and something really important happens at the office? If you don't answer the message, if you don't answer the email, and it's really important, what will they do? Well, they'll call me. So switch off your notifications. I could do that.
But then that also brings in, we need downtime. We need time away. We need a weekend off. What do we do as leaders if we need to delegate? So when we are away for the weekend, who's the person to call while I'm not here?
This is the biggest weak point. We don't delegate.
Well, exactly. But we're setting ourselves up, because we're not machines. We're not available. We can't be we can be alive 24/7, of course, but we're not necessarily working 24/7. And so if there is in our business a possibility, a likelihood, that a call's going to come in at 2 a.m. with an emergency, if I'm not the one on call, who is?
Absolutely. Right. Delegation, though, is another one of those topics, because people don't delegate very often because they feel that if they are delegating, they're going to be judged as lazy, as incompetent, as fill in the blank. So again, it comes down to, well, stress is linked to judgment. Okay, so you've got that fear of judgment. I can't give it to somebody else. I have to do it myself. It comes back to giving yourself permission to change the way that you're acting.
Got it.
Tiffany, final points then. Key points for our listeners. What are we going to do?
Check in with yourself. Notice when you're feeling hollow, and don't be afraid to reach out and ask for help. It's not weakness, it's strength. And if you want to show up for your team, for your family, then look after yourself.
Yes, back to the importance of self-reflection. You're in that space to do it.
And self-care.
Yes.
Put your oxygen mask on first.
Well, I love that. Yes. Nick, any final points?
I think for me, having reflected on this conversation a little today, I think soft burnout seems to be something that will insidiously creep up on you. And so it's useful just to take, and maybe I'm repeating Tiffany's point here, but deliberately take time out to reflect on how you are feeling and whether or not this is an early sign that things are a bit too much, and whether this bit too much is actually temporary or whether it's becoming a more permanent feature of where you're at. So yeah, try and avoid that insidious overtaking.
I just want to add something if I can, because one thing that you said, Nick, there is, what am I feeling? A lot of people have difficulties with that question. What am I feeling? I don't know. So I would say check in with yourself and ask yourself, what are you thinking? Might help.
Yeah. Good. Thank you.
What it gets me thinking as well is even just reminding ourselves of our values, actually reminding of our strengths. I've just been working with a client this week, funnily enough, and a number of points that we've touched on was certainly coming up for the client. And actually, what helped them was to get them to think about their strengths. Think about what they're good at, because typically we forget that. We forget our values and we go into this autopilot of, going back to your point earlier, because it resonated with me, Tiffany, about the fog. It's coasting along.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to Beyond Leading. If this episode was useful, follow or subscribe so you don't miss the next one, and share it with someone who'd appreciate it. And if you've got a minute, a quick rating or review really helps more people find the show.